Hi, OBKers. This is Paul McLean from YorkshireThought.com. Just wanted to say that I really enjoy your show and look forward to every new episode that comes out. And just thought I'd give you some voicemails so you actually have some to know how hard it is to get hold of. Thanks a lot and keep up the good work. Bye.
It is the Ogre Cave audio report for Halloween weekend, 2005. I am Mike Sugarbaker, your managing editor.
This is Alan Sugarbaker, editor-in-chief.
And this is Chris Handerhan with Endgame in Oakland, California.
And we have a special... Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to introduce you, but you can introduce yourself. You're a grown man.
Go right ahead. And this is Clinton Arnitson of AmbleWorks, and I'm a guest tonight.
Yes, we have a special guest from Raleigh?
Chapel Hill.
Chapel Hill, that's right, we went over that. Chapel Hill, North Carolina, the newly installed Clinton R. Nixon, co-administrator of the Forge Indie RPG Forum, author of Dungeon, which is a favorite here at Ogre Cave, as well as The Shadow of Yesterday and City of Brass, and just a whole lot of role-playing goodness. And since nothing happened this week, we're just going to go right into talking to you about your stuff. Now, this is... I want to lead with this question. It's kind of a cliche thing whenever anybody in gaming gets interviewed, but I do think it's important in this case especially. How did you start out in gaming? And, you know, did you start with D&D, or did you start with...
I did start with D&D. I actually wrote this story up once for Places to Go, People to Be. I grew up in the Deep South, and you know, D&D and that sort of thing was considered, you know, of the devil, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so when one day on a Sunday afternoon, I got a call from a one of the cool kids at school. Actually, he called me to come to his house to play D&D. He asked if I wanted to, and I really thought that we were about to go kill a goat. It was awesome. The whole ride into town, I told my mom we were going to go play basketball. My palms are sweating. Oh, my God. And I got there, and he's telling me to roll dice, and it was amazing. And then we killed Sturges, and then my elf died. But, yeah, so that was my that's how I got into role-playing. And we played D&D for quite a while. You know, I never really knew the rules. The first game that I ever learned the rules to actually was Twilight 2000 by GDW, which was the first game I GM'd.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's the first game I GM'd, and I still love it. It had, wow, I'm about to jump into stuff way ahead of you here. It had innovations that we have just seen in games today. One of the things that I really took from it was the idea when you're making a character, you could have... you could have people in your background that you didn't have to specify ahead of time. You just mentioned that, oh, I have a military contact. And then when you, you know, end up in the warlord's encampment and you have the, you know, ex-military officer who's in prison with you, you'd be like, oh, I know that guy from when I was in this campaign, and, you know, check it off your sheet.
Really?
So you've got player narration just slammed right into a very standard, you know, early 80s game that no one really expected, but that's the sort of stuff that, you know, we're just seeing again today. So,
that's very cool.
Twilight 2000, great game.
Now, for those who don't know the roots of the Forge and how it came to be, actually, maybe we shouldn't even jump to that yet.
Please tell me, because I'm kind of interested. You're asking the roots of the Forge?
I'm wondering if we shouldn't, before that, just back into... Well, how you transitioned into, you know, the kind of gaming you're doing as an adult.
Okay. I quit role-playing for several years. Joined the military after spending some time in college and didn't get a chance to play for about 2 or 3 years. And found myself getting involved in playing again after that time. And without a group, I turned to the internet, which I had gotten, you know, pretty big into, to find a group, started talking to people, found a guy who lived near me who, you know, I wanted to play with. And he said, yeah, you should check out this forum that I'm on, the Gaming Outpost. So I did.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I just had, like, the memory block was removed, and all this stuff about the Gaming Outpost just came back. That's crazy.
Yeah, you may remember the guy. He's still very active in his own gaming. Peter Seckler, who wrote some of the best settings I've ever seen. And now he plays a lot of D&D and has a one-man band called Hey Kid Nice Robot, which is awesome. But anyway, point being is he sent me over there. I started posting underneath a fake name, you know, when I had a handle or whatever. And from there, you know, I found a lot of people making their own games. And being that I had always enjoyed, you know, making stuff myself, being very DIY, I thought, hey, this is interesting. I ordered some of the games. Met Ron Edwards, ordered Sorcerer. Thought it was interesting. Met Jared Sorensen, you know, got an early copy of Inspectors and went, wow, this is, you know, crazy. And from there, it just took off. The Forge, I ended up being on through a complete accident of technical errors, to be honest. Yeah, the URL for, or the domain name for it, was lost by the original co-administrator who quit responding to email and kind of disappeared, and I offered to try and get the URL or get the domain name back, and so I did, and once that happened, I said, oh, what would you think about putting a forum up here for, like, 10 people to talk on? And, you know, Ron said, that'd be great, and, you know, over four years later, here we are. I checked the stats today, and we have over 2,000 people who have actually posted there now, like 2,000 active users, which is amazing.
That is awesome. I think I mentioned I don't think I did mention it because it didn't end up in the recordings I was able to make at Gen Con. But at the Forge booth at Gen Con, first, the fact that there is a Forge booth at Gen Con and it's sizable and it was constantly packed, and that's one thing. But the fact of the community is, I think, really the most amazing thing about the Forge. It's like everybody that I talked to there. Well, it seemed like everybody that I talked to at that booth had a game for sale there, but they also wanted to sell me everybody else's games.
It's true. We're all each other's biggest fan. The day before Gen Con, I swear you make as many sales as the day of Gen Con because all your friends want a copy.
Yeah.
But, it's amazing to me what a close-knit group we have, even with that many people. We get together for each other's weddings, when each other has kids. We, we make it a point to call each other. It's not just an online community. It's very strange to me, like, what a tight-knit community it has really become. So, well,
that opens up what I think is the most serious question facing, the most serious question facing role-playing right now, which is, you know, if we're all each other's biggest fans, that is legitimately a very cool thing, but how do you open it up from there? How do you see the Forge affecting the larger... I mean, it sounds to me kind of silly to call role-playing mainstream, but that interaction, I think, has definitely begun to happen. And how do you see it playing out?
How does it affect that? I honestly believe what's going on right now is a complete redefinition of role-playing as a hobby. I really honestly do. I don't see it as the same hobby it was 5 years ago. I think it's a dying hobby. A lot of the itches that it scratched were itches that are being scratched by things that are much more technologically interesting these days.
Yeah.
Things like World of Warcraft and, you know, other online games. Strangely, I don't play any of those. There's new itches that, you know, it also scratched that have been, I would say, focused upon. And by the fact that we are, you know, getting more specific and somewhat changing what we're going for, the entire hobby changing. The games that I see my friends publish and the games that I'm trying to write, I look at them and I can't in good faith say it's the same sort of game. And I'm not making a value judgment, I'm not saying it's a better sort of game, but I can't say it's the same sort of game as... for example, you know, Star Frontiers or Traveler or something. But the rule sets would be so incredibly different, it would be like saying that... I mean, chess and Monopoly are both board games. It would be like saying Monopoly and Carcassonne are the same type of game. I suppose you play them both with boards and, you know, dice and have some, you know, pieces of paper or chips or whatever that you use. But otherwise... you couldn't classify those as the same sort of game. Both fun games, but different types.
Yeah, no, I
just rambled on there.
Wow. No, I agree with you completely, and you know, I like listening to people saying things I agree with, so you know, no worries.
When all you do is define game types by the medium that they're played in, it's far too broad to really get anything useful out of the definition. I have to totally agree.
Yeah, well, go ahead, sorry.
I was just thinking on that note, in a sense, from its inception, role-playing games have had this problem that you see in computer games now, and or that you only recently see people complaining about in computer gaming, but it's that the genre is one-hit game plus everything that imitates it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we're kind of confined by that, or we've been confined by that in role-playing. I think just the shadow of D&D has been huge, 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 even though, as some people on you know, somewhere in the Forge community have pointed out lately, differences between Redbox D&D from back in the day and D&D 3.0 are crazy huge.
Oh, yeah, they get called the same thing, but you can't even... I mean, if you're going to talk about D&D in context of having a serious discussion, you have to specify what you're playing, because Redbox D&D and the newest version of it, they're two completely different games with just some very, very light, similarities in color. Yeah. Otherwise, different games completely. Different goals behind them.
Yeah, but I agree that that role-playing is undergoing a sea change right now. And on so many fronts that have so many different names that it's difficult for some people to even identify them as being part of the same motion.
Oh, yes.
I talked a little bit last week about alternate reality gaming, the stuff that's going on online. They're essentially just online LARPs.
Right.
And the stuff at the Forge is at least calling itself role-playing and, is often trying to be in the same tradition as, Redbox D&D and everything that followed it, but also really challenging a lot of the assumptions there.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems is that a lot of the designs that are coming out of the Forge are going to have the next couple of years is, what do they call themselves? I mean, I had the hardest problem when I wrote the show yesterday deciding what to call it. And it's very strange, as one of the co-administrators of the Forge, I think I probably write the most traditional games that come out of there.
I don't think I agree, really.
The Shadow of Yesterday is pretty traditional, but I could call that a role-playing game, but I kind of toned down my ranting between the first version and the revised edition, but in the first version, I had a whole rant about, I don't know what to call this, so I'm going to call it a role-playing game because it's just easy to, but otherwise, that's not what it is.
Hmm.
So.
Now, I have to admit that I still have not looked very closely at The Shadow of Yesterday.
Well, I'm glad. The first version was not nearly as good, so it's
are
nice.
You're working on a new edition now?
Oh, it is out. It has been out for some time. It's available on Lulu.com and also from Indie Press Revolution.
Okay, so. but it wasn't at Gen Con, because that's when I would have had the opportunity to look at it.
No, it was at Gen Con.
It was? Okay, well...
I had some really awful printer problems, though, and so I had a small number. They did sell out rather quickly, so it was... You might have missed it, but I got my printer problems resolved, and it's in full distribution now. Indie Press Revolution, my online distributor guys, they just started selling to retailers too, so I'm kind of excited to see where that goes.
That is cool news, actually. That's because I know that certain retailers are picking up on some Forge stuff. Burning Wheel has found distribution. Chris,
Burning Wheel is what? Yeah, Burning Wheel is. I think it's the this sort of edge on the big wedge of indie RPGs in terms of getting it into mainstream role-playing.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them may be making their breakthroughs in other arenas, but in terms of, I can't say enough nice things about the Burning Wheel. It's an excellent game.
Yeah, I've started to look into that a little bit, and it looks, it's really well produced. It's really well written in terms of setting forth ideas and leading you through them. It's really well done work. Chris mentioned to me last week that that his store is picking up Dogs in the Vineyard and has been carrying the No Press anthology, which I just think is fantastic, fantastic
wow.
book.
Yeah.
in fact, there's the game in the No Press RPG anthology called Discernment, and I'm going to have to get it out and look at who the author is of that game.
Michael Miller.
Michael Miller, okay.
Who?
Thank you for bailing my ass out there.
Who just published With Great Power, his superhero role playing
game. Oh, is that him as well?
Yeah.
That's excellent news. Discernment was what made me formulate the theory that I kind of tossed off with no backup last week about how role-playing games are slowly morphing from the model of this is a game product that you take home and play with the people around you as though, you know, it's a game in a Parker Brothers box or whatever. And it's going from that business model more towards a business model of theater, of performing arts.
I would completely agree. That's what I almost started to say earlier, and I said for you to bring it up so I didn't have to be the pretentious one. I think part of that is the marketplace. Like I said before, if you want a couple of hours of entertainment where you're, slaying a dragon or killing some orcs or whatever, you can really get that online these days. And, from my understanding of it and from watching my friends play and whatnot, you can even have a lot of the same social aspects.
Yeah.
You can meet people online that you know well and hang out with them and have a lot of fun. And there's this, I read people's, live journal posts or on forums or whatever where they're talking about playing a multiple person online role-playing game. And they even have their own language now where they're talking about, God, I don't even know. They've got buffs and they've got this, that, and the other. And I see this huge social connection. I go, wow, that's neat. And it really is going to kill what role playing was. But for role playing to exist as a hobby, it's got to change. And I think it is. I think it's going more towards being an art form, which is nuts to say out loud. But have you seen Polaris?
I have not looked closely at Polaris yet either, and I want to.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
I mean, it is the resolution of the game is based off strict ritual. It found something that there's no way you could ever replicate in a computerized form and just pushed it to the limit. But when everything about your game is around the concept of like ritual statements and thought, how can you call it anything but that?
That's what got me about Discernment, was that it has the scripted bits and it has so much performance in it.
Correct.
That I just thought, the way this game could thrive is like I would pay money to go to a theater and watch four or five really skilled role players play this game. It's like a really elaborate improv game that a improv theater would do.
Right.
And, I think that model has legs. It's Robin Laws wrote about this when he was writing the column, the CPageXX column. One of the first things he wrote was, why are these LARPs are all over the television, and they're incredibly successful, and yet no one in the role-playing community has noticed. And, by LARPs, he, of course, meant Survivor, Big Brother, The Apprentice, and all that.
That actually points out something that I was going to bring up. Your release, City of Brass, describes itself as a combination of Survivor and, what was it?
Heart of Darkness.
Heart of Darkness, yes.
Yeah.
I'm one of the few people I know that's a gamer that actually readily admits, yeah, I watch Survivor, I watch several reality shows, I enjoy them, and I watch them for the game aspect and go, ooh, that was a poor move, you socially inept dumbass. You're going to be off the island next week. And just kind of a relaxing game exercise of watching people totally destroy their chances to win.
Right.
I think you're in the silent majority there.
I think I am. And hearing your game described that way really intrigued me.
Yeah, I watched the first season of Survivor. I haven't had TV in a couple of years, so I haven't seen it since then. But I really enjoyed the first season. I found it really exciting. So it kind of inspired me when I was writing that. That was for the Iron Game Chef competition, which is, guys might have seen, a competition online where people, you get a set of ingredients. This year, two of the ingredients were Companion and Accuser, which just screamed reality TV to me. How you form these social relationships very quickly, where you have your person who you trust, and then you have your person who is going to try and stab you and accuse you of stealing the rice or whatever is going on. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of online design competitions, the whole Ronnie's thing, how many of these have there been? Are we on the second one now?
Yeah, it's the second month. The first month, he got way too many responses, just more than he ever expected, I think about 30.
Yeah.
And so this month, he reduced the time period that you could write it in to about 7 to 9 days, somewhere around there.
Well, define this for anyone who hasn't heard about it, if you
okay.
could.
The Ronnie's is a competition. It's being hosted on the Forge by Ron Edwards, but it's not really associated with the Forge. It's a Ron Edwards thing.
Right.
Where each month he specifies four ingredients. There are things that have to be in your game, two of which can be in your game. You have to specifically pick two and leave out the other two and write a short, or there's no specification for a short form, but you're going to end up, because of the limited time period, a short-form role-playing game in 24 hours and submit it to him. He's taking all of them that he judges as ones that he would really enjoy to play as is, and the original plan was for him to give $75 to each winner, which there's no limit to how many people could win. He's now broken that because he had such a hard time choosing who was going to be winners into two tiers where three or four people get $75 and the rest would get $25 from Adept Press, his game company, in order to sponsor them publishing the game. And he's just got tremendous response. And some of the most interesting games I've seen have come out of it. I wrote one for the first Ronnie's, which was pretty bad, I'll admit. I wrote it on a Greyhound bus as I rode from Alabama
Sweet.
To North Carolina. I was fleeing from Hurricane Katrina, and I
That's
was
right.
coming
you
here
are,
for a job interview.
You're a resident of New Orleans, huh?
That's correct. I was I took a bus up here for my job interviews, and I wrote it on there. I loved the concept, but between the screaming guy next to me trying to call his girlfriend in South Korea the entire time we were on there, and trying to get me to give him phone advice and babies and crackheads and whatnot. It wasn't conducive to concentration, but I liked my concept.
Wow, that's an adventure in and of itself.
Yeah. Lots of grist for the role-playing mill there.
But yeah, when I made the post this past week about kind of stumbling around the Forge and wishing I had the time to immerse myself in here completely, because there was so much going on and because I felt like full immersion was the only way that I could really find everything and be apprised of what was going on. Like, the whole indie game design sub-forum of the Forge is full of responses to games that were posted for the Ronnie's, and I looked around trying to find where all the entries were at least listed, and there didn't seem to be any place, or even a page that actually set forth the conditions and terms and the premise of this contest, and I couldn't find that either.
Because it's hopping so quickly, you have to go back a couple pages to find it. People are submitting them on a pretty cool website, 1 Million Monkeys, 1 Million Typewriters. Or 1 million typewriters, 1 million monkeys. It's 1KM, 1KT.com.
Okay.
That's sort of the site that's been hosting all the Iron Game Chef and 24-hour RPG stuff.
Oh, okay.
But, so you can find all the games there. But, as well, there are posts on the Forge. And, I'll go ahead and mention, I heard you guys talk before about you wish there was some place you could go and you could find, the sort of top news, what's going on in the Forge. And I'm kind of actively working to make that happen. I'm trying to get together a couple of people right now to be guest bloggers, but I think I'm going to have to start a Best of the Forge blog, probably be called MetaForge, and do that. There's a lot of neat stuff that happens each month there that it can be hard to find. I don't want to say in the noise, but in the in just the breadth of conversation. The thing that's most, of course, I'm a computer programmer and a game designer, so that's what it's like me, is a guy named John Kirk came out with his 150 page document called RPG Design Patterns, where he took the software development concept of design patterns. Things that you would see repeated in between different programs that you could use to make your programs better, and did that in role-playing games. Literally dissected about 20 role-playing games and found out what elements do these have in common, and then wrote definitions of each pattern and good sites to using it, bad sites to using it. He has a whole diagramming language for it. And then he also lists about five or six games that he does in detail in there. And it sounds absurdly geeky, and it is.
It sounds absurdly
technical, and it is, but it's really interesting.
It's flabbergasting. Can you give us an example of like what one of these patterns would be?
I have the book here with me. One of the patterns, he just lists trait as a very simple example of a pattern. But then another one would be called, I think, conflict tree is one that he has in there, where he shows how, one conflict feeds into the next conflict, feeds into the next conflict in terms of how things are going to be resolved. There's a specific version of that called Last Man Standing, which is, of course, the traditional combat system you'd see in something like D&D, where you have several conflicts in a row that all feed into the overarching conflict of do I survive this battle. Last Man Standing means, it's a pattern where you have a conflict tree and you have a resource that's a countdown. When that resource reaches zero, you're out of the conflict. Well, that's hit points and all your, rounds of combat in D&D, for example.
So this book is an attempt to kind of tease out anything that you can isolate as saying this is a mechanic in role-playing games, and give it a name and tape it down. And
right.
Is that a reasonable?
No, that's a very reasonable. That's a very reasonable description of it. And
okay.
Yeah, it's mind blowing the amount of time put into it. Right now it's kind of in beta. He's updating the PDF with people's suggestions. He's put it up there, but it's good enough right now that you can pick it up and read it and find it very interesting. And if you're designing a game, find it very, very useful. The new game I'm working on, I decided as sort of a thought experiment that I would diagram everything as I was doing it, try to identify what I was doing from there, and try and actually weigh his advice when I was deciding how to make the systems of the game. And so far, I'm finding it pretty rewarding. It's working out pretty well.
It's mind-blowing to me, not just how much kind of creative energy has come out of the Forge, but how much analytical energy has come out of the Forge as well. And I don't think it's a coincidence that those have come together. I mean, I think it was Ron Edwards who first came up with the whole gamist versus simulationist versus narrativist thing, right?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. It would be a firestorm every time it came up on RPGNet forums. And
God, yes it is. To be completely correct, that originally derived somewhat from the old rec FRP advocacy or whatever, one of the old Usenet groups. I never was a big Usenet head, but there they had something called GDS, Gamism, Dramatism, Simulationism. The Gamism, Narrativism, Simulationism thing that Ryan has come up with, the big model, as it's called these days, is pretty radically different from that. He changed a lot of the definitions, and of course now it's been expanded way outside of that. That's actually a very specific subset of it. But yeah, and he the model in its current form was totally authored by him. So, of course, with the participation of most people in the Forge. You mentioned that it causes a firestorm on RPGNet, and you're right. And I totally want to address that, if you don't mind, for a second.
Sure. Well, I was the overseer of RPGNet forums for years, and every time the GNS debate came up, we pretty much had our fingers on the closed thread button, just kind of waiting. There it goes. By all means, go ahead.
It's easy for it to cause a firestorm because, like most things in the Forge, it's still a work in progress. And the Forge is very, very dense in terms of information, so it's hard to, if you haven't been participating the whole time, it's hard to see this sometimes, but everything we do there is something that's been developed over years. And if someone takes, a quote, I remember early on the Forge, probably in the first year, when it was literally like 50 of us mats that ever talked there. At first it was five of us, literally. I mean, I put the forum up for me and five friends to talk, and it just kept growing. When we could get away with saying a lot more, when you're in a room with 10 people, you can say whatever's on your mind. And someone came up with the concept that people who played simulationist-type games were schizophrenic. All right, and this is an early thread, like from the first months. And I see that thing quoted on RPGNet today all the time, and they flip out. And I go, that was, if someone didn't have that thought, we wouldn't have the level of discussion on it today. but, you know, that's not the current state of things. I personally am not a huge, you know, I probably talked more about the whole GNS thing in the last 5 minutes than I ever do. It's not something that, I mean, it's something I definitely learned from. I'm not naysaying it by any means. Some people sometimes get that wrong, but, I mean, I think it's cool and I'm glad it happened and I learned a lot from it, but it's not all that's out there. And, you know, people also sometimes accuse the Forge of being very single-minded in terms of GNS, but I look and I see a lot of people with a lot of competing thoughts. And when someone like John Kerr comes up with this RPG design patterns, I just have to point and go, you know, have you seen this? If you think that the only thing that comes out is GNS, then this is some serious analysis from kind of a different angle. Instead of analyzing, you know, the purpose of a role-playing game is trying to analyze the distinct components of a role-playing game.
Yeah, I mean, when I read the Forge and when I read people, you know, tossing around the GNS terms, I get the real feeling that people are using this idea as a tool. You know, it gets talked about a lot at the Forge because it's a very useful tool for what Forge people are trying to do. Whereas in a lot of other settings, people hear, you know, any kind of, you know, model of what they do that doesn't fit with, you know, what they already think about what they do, and they think suddenly that they're being ordered around.
Right.
And, of course, the people at RPGNet also seem to be willing to pick a fight about anything, so...
Well, that's RPGNet, yeah.
I don't want to say that. I try to keep things civil between me and them, but yeah.
I'm still actively involved in, like, the administration of RPGNet, and yet I say that, because that's how they behave.
It can be a bit of a tinderbox.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the funny thing is the theory, when you distill it down, is it's not that, it's nothing to get that upset about. I mean, in its most distilled form, it's that games do reward things, and people will act in the way that they're rewarded. And so when designing a game, you should be aware of what you're rewarding in the game and decide if that's the behavior that you want in playing the game. And that's it. That's really the theory in, you know, four sentences.
Right on. Chris, I wanted to see if you have any input here. From your perspective as a retailer, pretty much over the last year and a half, when you and I have ever talked about indie role-playing games, it's always been about how indie role-playing games are dying in the market. And, you know, before I really started to notice stuff percolating out of the Forge community, I was just operating on the assumption that, you know, in 10 years' time, D&D is going to be the only role-playing game left in print. You know,
that's a ridiculous assumption, but anyway.
That was a dramatic way of stating something that was actually a little more subtle. But definitely, you know, I was under the impression that the market would not look much like a shelf full of different games anymore. You know, that if you had different games, you'd be finding them, you know, either maybe as the occasional D20 book, or you'd be finding them online. And that may still be the case, but I don't know. I mean, but then you've also just started bringing these things into Endgame, I suppose. So maybe it's just too early to really talk about it.
It's tough because for the longest time, independent role playing, aside with some very notable exceptions, was a bunch of people producing D20, you know, hanger-on product. So it kind of was killing itself off just by being a one-trick pony there for a little while. Mm. Of course, you still had people like the fine folks at Chaosium, and you had everyone else, you know, who weren't doing D20 clones. But the market just got weird that way. So when we saw companies fall off the map there, it was a lot of those folks. So that form of independent role-playing seems to be dying out somewhat.
Yeah. And in some ways, what got me excited about the Forge was, here's a community of people who are making role-playing games who don't think that that means that they've got to find a way to make a hardbound, you know, color book for $35 and get it into distribution. They're just, those aren't the terms in which they start thinking about it. They start thinking about, for lack of better terms, the art form. And, you know, They put it out in PDF because that's simple enough, or they just put it out as a text file because that's simple enough, and then, oh, if people want a print version, here you go. And it was just an inversion of the way of thinking about the business, or of not thinking about the business. Either way, it's an inversion.
I'm just wondering if the two communities aren't separating in that way.
I think they're actually coming closer together, but it's going very slowly.
Really? Because I see it as the folks who want to buy D&D because, that's what they're comfortable with, B, that's all they know, and C, because they want to just throw a lot of dice and play, you know, what is essentially a miniatures game with a lot of storytelling wrapping put onto it.
Well, yeah, I think in terms of the community of consumers, in the terms of the community of players, I think that is always going to be true to a degree.
Right.
And I think increasingly the people who want that are only going to want D&D.
And that's kind of what I'm wondering is there is that crowd who that is what role-playing is to them.
Yeah.
And they're not going to look to the Forge or anybody else, for that matter, you know, and those people with those interests are kind of shifting away from maybe the need for a brick-and-mortar market. Maybe it's niche enough that they can just produce the products through PDF and sell through small press, you know, direct. Maybe that crowd just doesn't need brick-and-mortar anymore.
That crowd meaning the D&D crowd?
No, the...
The other crowd.
The other crowd. The D&D crowd obviously is getting service through their, you know, local game store, Barnes & Noble, you know, Amazon, and they're getting that comfortable product and not breaking out of that mold.
I'd love to speak to that for a second there.
Definitely.
I think that in a lot of ways you're right. You know, I see a lot of people go directly to the author of the game now because they feel like, you know, hey, I'm supporting his art more. I do think there is room for retailers there. There are a couple of retailers that are doing really, really well with selling independent RPGs, but they're changing the way they do business to, are there different in general? I know, what is it, out of Boston, you've got, kind of one to say, Pandemonium Games, who, they sell a lot there. I actually, when I used to live in Seattle, I sold some at the local zine shop, which was exactly the market I wanted to be at. It is interesting. I think we are having a little technology convergence now where you may see more independent role-playing games in stores, but I'm not certain how they're going to sell. They really are the sort of thing where you kind of need direct contact with someone who has played it or with the author himself to get super interested. It is a word-of-mouth sort of thing, and I'm not certain the brick-and-mortar game store is the right place for that. I don't know if it's the wrong place yet, but I do wonder. I'm very glad that Indie Press Revolution finally has started selling to retailers because it gives us room to have that experiment and see where it goes.
I think the type of person that's going to go out and just happen to cruise through the game store and pick up an indie game on a whim is getting more and more rare. Even as someone who used to just pick up anything and everything to check it out myself, I tend to think more and more, if I get this, will anybody play it with me?
Yeah.
And if my main group of guys that I see every week are just sticking with Dungeons and Dragons and that's all they want to do, then I may not pick it up.
Yeah, well, see, that's the big challenge right there for retail stores is with a board game, you can have a board game night and you can have a regular event and people can try different games.
Mm-hmm.
I think with role-playing games, that's much, much more difficult. I mean, I know Chris, maybe you could speak to this. I don't know that anything other than D&D or Hero System has gotten played in an organized fashion at Endgame for I don't know how long. I mean, what...
D&D is the only one. I'm going to take a step back, and I'm going to tell you from my personal experience, we've sold about 8 copies of Broken Wheel, maybe more at this point.
Of Burning Wheel.
Sorry, what did I say?
Broken Wheel.
There you go.
It'll be broken after it's burnt, so, you know.
It's a limited edition.
Yeah, no, it was a typo on the book. I didn't say it wrong. Anyway, at least half of those were people who were interested in the concept and had never heard of it before. So, you know, it's just one of those things where maybe it's our clientele, I don't know, but, it's one of those things where I really believe the need for the brick-and-mortar store to get those people to places like the Forge, maybe, rather than vice versa.
I used to hope that the way things were going to go where we're going to see a lot of independent authors going to stores and running demos. And instead, where that energy ended up going was to local conventions. There's more and more, like there's a local convention here in North Carolina in two or 3 weeks that I'm going to that ends up that about 5 or 6 people from the Forge are going to go to. The Double Exposure team out on the East Coast, which runs a lot of conventions up and down the East Coast, has ended up, they have a free hotel room for anyone who's a game designer from the Forge who wants to come to any of their cons now.
They just pay
for your hotel room. So we've had, you know, a lot of people start going to that. I think there's still room for that sort of independent designer goes around the stores, you know, talks it up, and then, you know, perhaps it starts, you know, growing in the community and people will buy it from the store. I don't want to be offensive here. I think there's a little fear from designers about stores in general. There's sort of this misconception that it's not a place that they're welcome, which is sad because I don't think that's true in most cases. But
I'm encouraged to hear Chris saying a bunch of people have come to a store and picked up a relatively independent RPG, because I was despairing that people like that don't exist except at conventions like the one you're talking about.
Right.
That more and more they only go to the cons or stay home and order things online.
I'm going to make a suggestion right here and now, too, is that if you go to those conventions as authors, I actually support that. I think that's where you are going to spend your best time hitting, you know, 100, 200, 300 people all at once very interested in what you're doing, rather than coming and doing a store signing where you'll be more than welcome, but you're going to see 7 people, you know.
Right.
And there's nothing we can do about that. You know, we that's just how it often works out. But if you could partner with a local store to assist you at conventions or to help you carry product or just be a presence in their booth maybe, they could take that goodwill back to their store with them and try and help introduce the games to their clients, perhaps with a new level of respect and interest.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you there. You know, I know that there's going to be some people who, you know, are writing games right now listening to this, and I think the best thing for them to do is go to their local store and start establishing a connection there. One store is better than none. I mean, if you get a presence at your local store, that will grow. And then when you have local conventions, they'll come, you'll have that partnership, and it just, I think it's a great way to make things work out. So
we're lucky enough to have Guido Teuber come in and run demos at our store. And it created such a nice little sub-community of board gamers in our store. And, it, you know, we're a small place. We touch X amount of people in the San Francisco Bay Area, but that good word spreads.
Well, you know, Endgame is an exceptional store with an exceptional event space also. And there's a lot of local stores out there that either have poor event space or have no event space.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one obstacle. But, you know, those stores are going to die out anyway, in my opinion. But, having events going, it makes me think of the RPGNet Games Days that happened in a couple of spots.
Including Endgame.
Including Endgame.
Yeah. Those are so cool. That's the neatest idea that's come out of RPGNet in a long time.
Well, that model could work for the Forge, I think. But,
oh, yeah. I'm totally giving away Secret Forge information. I think the Secret Forge police will come and get me later.
Yes, yes.
The concept is being bandied around of doing a big Forge day in the spring. Somewhere in the Midwest, we're just going to start with one, but have sort of a new type of convention. I don't know if it'll happen, and I don't have any details, but I've heard talk among, you know, high level members of the Secret Forge Police.
It should be a big Forge Games Day, because then you can call it the BFG.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I had to go there.
Very nice.
One other direction we could go from this is, and it's actually germane even, is Clinton, you can talk about the relevance of your new employer.
Yes, I've been dying to. So
do it.
They're all going to listen to this. I told them I was going to talk about it.
Awesome.
No,
Hello in North Carolina.
My new employer is incredible. It's a company called Lulu.com, which I have been a promoter of for about 2 years now. I started using them. I had the first RPG on there a couple of years ago with Dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw them on the internet one day because I'm a big computer nerd as well. And I see on Slashdot that Bob Young, the founder of Red Hat's, formed this new company where supposedly you can print your games for free, and that didn't make any sense. And I went, what? So I went there, and it's true. What they do is it's print on demand. It's true print on demand in terms of you upload your PDF, your cover art, do everything, and then when a customer comes and orders it, it is printed for that customer and sent to him. It does mean you have a little more of a delay than you may with traditional printing. It takes about 3 to 5 days for it to actually be printed and then shipped. But it allows authors who aren't interested in doing the entire business side of it or don't have the money to put up up front or for some reason find this to be a better idea to actually go ahead and publish that way. With these days, I've gotten a little bit more into the business side of things, but when I wrote Dungeon, I did not write it to run a business. That was the last thing I wanted to do. I wrote it just because I felt like writing it. It was kind of stuck in my head as a neat idea. And a lot of independent authors are going to be that way, and yet they can have a really nice-looking product now. I just got my new copies of The Shadow yesterday from them, and even if I didn't work there, I would be just blown away at how nice they look. So they.
I've been trying
to
figure out: is there any distinctive way to tell that a book has come from Lulu.com? Do they put their logo in the cover
page? Not anymore.
Or?
There's tools there to lay out your own cover online, which if you do that, it'll have a Lulu logo. But if you upload your own cover. Not anymore. Is there any way to tell? It used to be that on the back of the book near the bottom you'd see a Lulu ID number, and even that has become optional with our new release that we're coming out with. So, there's really no way to tell.
Because I have copies of Dogs in the Vineyard and the first edition of Primetime Adventures here, and I'm trying to figure out if one of them came from Lulu.com, and I can't.
Neither one of those did.
Okay.
The other... Besides The Shadow of Yesterday, the best-selling RPG there that you'll see is Conspiracy of Shadows, which is by Kiesanowski, and just a killer game, so good. But it comes from Lulu, and I have to admit, I didn't do a print game after Dungeon until The Shadow of Yesterday, and the first version of it I didn't do through Lulu. It had been a couple of years; they had really progressed with what they had to offer, and so
City of Brass
I saw
exists in print, doesn't it?
Do what?
City of Brass?
City of Brass. No, City of Brass I'm selling as just a media download.
Oh, okay.
Because it involves cards and whatnot. And Lulu doesn't offer that. Who knows?
I saw something on the shelf at Gen Con, so okay. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, yeah. I made my own copies of that. Those were all handmade by the author, which I thought was just great. But, I cut my own cards. So,
sweet.
But, they've started offering stuff in all sorts of sizes and whatnot, so you're seeing more and more games. I've actually found a couple independent RPGs there that I hadn't seen elsewhere, which was great, including a French game it's by a French company, and it's not in French. The author may be French. The author's name was Hieronymus, which can't be his real name. It's called Seven Leaves, and it was pretty cool. He had it in a crazy landscape format, which you'd never see anywhere else, 7x9.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a neat, neat little game about fairy tales. So.
Well, you see that format with that one supplement from Human Head, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's the same format there, the Redhurst Academy of Magic.
Right.
So.
Well, I was going to ask you on the topic of PDF versus print and electronic downloads and such, how you would react, or how you did react, rather, to RPG Now splitting off a whole bunch of companies into RPG Now Edge for the smaller press and such.
Wow, you want to watch me get some enemies real quick here?
That's my goal. Let's
I'll give a disclaimer first. Two of my games are on RPG Now, and here's where I make enemies. The only reason they're still on RPG Now is I'm too lazy to take them down. I can't emphasize enough how badly I think that place is mismanaged. It blows my mind. The removal of stuff into RPG edge.rpgnow.com it is shooting themselves in the foot.
You think so?
I mean, they may make the majority of their money off of certain products, and they have that knowledge, and I don't. And so, you know, maybe they really do know what they're doing. But from an outside perspective, it seems to me that they are taking a huge amount of their base and shunting it off to some place that people are not going to see. I know as a consumer on RPG Now, when I go there to buy, you know, product X, I end up buying two other products that I didn't know about before. And the reason I do this is that, you know, I'm searching on the site, I see there's something new, and I go, oh, neat, and I'll get that, even though I was looking for a much bigger product. If it's shunted off somewhere where I'm not going to be able to see that while I'm looking for other product, then they're doing something wrong. Personally, I think they would have been much better off to revamp their site and maybe hide that huge breadth of information they had on their page, because I will say it was overwhelming. But when you're looking at game apps, you know, have some links to point out game Y and Z that, you know, touch on similar ground or have similar keywords or people who bought this, bought that, whatever. Just make the information more accessible, not remove it because it's too much. Find a new way to show it because it's too much.
Yeah. See, I think their goal was probably to wrap that stuff in a brand and build that brand in order to strengthen that stuff. But the problem with that is that once you move it off into a separate site, then people are going to look at your little thing in the sidebar about this new site you're starting and think, oh, that's an ad. Whereas when they see related products or new products, they'll look at those because that's product.
Exactly. I don't know. I
say all that actually not having been to RPG Now to see what they how they advertise ads. Let's see it.
No, I poked around through it, and really the prevalent opinion that I've been hearing from people in the industry that are publishers of various magnitudes, just a single person doing PDFs or a big company, is the more markets you're involved in for the downloadable products in particular, the better. You know, there are certain customers that like to go to RPG Now, and that's the only place they go, and so if they don't see it there, they're not going to see it.
Right.
But
right.
If RPG Now is itself fragmenting its own audience or making it more difficult for its audience to see its stock, rather, I can see what you're saying in that it's frustrating for the smaller press. People suddenly put in the other room with the door only partway open.
Yeah, it's not very prevalent on the site, and it's in an unreadable font.
Wow.
Is it really? And it's in a spot where it looks like it's an ad. So, yeah, that's 0 for 3.
Yeah. I mean, and I like to think that people have good intentions. I really don't think that they went out and tried to screw small publishers. That's not what I'm saying.
No, of course not.
I was being a little inflammatory on purpose. But I think it was just a bad decision.
Yeah.
So, of course, they've kind of gone nuts with that several times. You know, they had RPG Mall for a while where they sold print versions of smaller press games. And then they've moved that. And are they using RPG Mall anymore? I thought it was a pretty good brand they had going on there, and then they just changed it. I'm not certain why they're doing that. So, anyway.
I don't see any mention of it here.
Yeah. But I will say the Edge site looks really nice. I just went to it, and I like the graphic there. I like the way it looks. I just don't know if anyone's going to go to it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, as soon as you put extra barriers in the way, even if they're tiny ones like click here for more, you're going to get a percentage of people that don't make it that far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Well, the hour has grown late. Unfortunately, I think we could talk a lot longer about a lot of this stuff, but
this is what happens with multiple time zones.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I definitely have a little more time, but I know the podcast is getting a little long too.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we're coming up on an hour, so the three
we'll
of us.
We'll have to have Clinton. We'll have to have you come back again sometime.
Definitely.
No problem.
If
I can
like.
Come back anytime you like.
Except for the next. Yeah.
Oh yes, I am. Yeah, that's my big news. I'm getting married, so. I'm going to be busy the next couple of weeks, but yeah,
kind
of. Well, many congratulations, and thank you for taking time out to be with us. I guess we're going to run to new release, or we can talk about what we've played recently, but I know I haven't really played anything. Alan, you got anything?
What have I played recently? I should be receiving the Xbox game Nightmare Before Christmas, Oogie's Revenge, which I'll be playing. I'll be playing a lot with my daughter and probably my wife as well. Excellent. But as for this week, it's been the weekly D&D game. That's all I had time for, really.
Chris, you're getting your BattleTech game back in the swing of things, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, no, I've just been playing BattleTech and reading Shadowrun.
All right. Are there any new releases of note this week?
Pirates of the Barbary Coast.
Oh, that's right.
It's out. New Blue Moon expansions from, let's see, we got Aqua and Emissaries and Inquisitors.
I still have not played that.
Boy, I've heard good things.
I have played it, and you're not going to hear great things from me.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
Yeah. It's also one of those few games that I've had where people walk up and they buy the whole thing at once. You don't see a lot of that. So anyway, Citadel's The Dark City expansion, Beowulf from Fantasy Flight came in.
Oh, Vegas, that's right.
Vegas Showdown, which looked really cheesy, but some of our kind of hardcore board game guys were intrigued. So we got a demo to be able to play it a week early, and it'll come in on Friday.
Okay. Cool.
Let's Kill Second Edition.
That made it out. Excellent.
Long-time favorite of mine.
Let's see, the War Machine models from Kador, Kador, Behemoth, Warjack, Crix, Deathjack, Alexia, and the Risen Troops, and the Thrall Warrior. Very exciting stuff. And then we'll see Mall of Horrors and the L5R Legend of the Five Rings role playing supplement, The Four Winds, or previously called the Lotus Book. And there's a whole bunch more. And I think the only other one of note is the Hecatomb expansion that came in, that won't be coming in, but that came out. And Mech Warrior Annihilation came out as well.
Wow, I just heard nothing about the Hecatomb expansion.
Yeah,
it's got a great name. It's called Last of Hallows Eve, and I don't know that this game is selling anywhere. So
yeah, that doesn't beat the expansion titles that they have for Duel Masters, which I have to say are still the greatest titles ever for anything.
That's true.
Yeah, agreed.
I can't remember any of them right now, but
I think there's Crushinators of Doom or something.
All right,
I don't know.
All right. Oh, okay. It looks like we lost Clinton. But I guess we said our goodbyes there.
Yes, we did. I didn't mean for him to leave then.
I didn't either.
I think he wanted to. I think he was tired.
It was It's we kept him up about 10 minutes after we were gonna. So,
yeah. He needed to go home or to go log off and go sleep.
Definitely. All right. And that's the show. And we're gonna hopefully have another guest sometime in the future.
I'd love to have Clinton back. I'd love to
definitely
love to talk to him more about trying to find the happy medium between the FLGS and places like the Forge.
Definitely,
because I think there is one.
Right on. Well, that's a discussion that's going to be a lot more fruitful in the months and few years to come. I think.
The more successful they are, it trickles down to us.
Excellent.
Oh, excellent.
All right, well, folks, let's call it a show. I've had a great time this week. I hope our listeners have too, all of our new friends at lulu.com, apparently.
Hello.
Hello. You look so much bigger on the internet. No, that's not true. You're large and intimidating. But yeah, I am the large and intimidating Mike Sugarbaker.
No, you're not. And I'm Alan Sugarbaker.
We'll take a vote. We'll have a poll.
Dude, I've got at least 3 inches on you.
I'm not intimidated.
All right. And Chris, you are?
I'm going home.
Oh, okay. Good.
Me too, man.
All right.
See y'all fools later.
Bye.